Last time we discussed chatzitzos in the eyes and contact lenses, I'll just make a couple brief follow-up points on what we discussed last time before we move on. Moshe had asked at the after shiur last time for further clarification about what the Mechaber writes in Sif Lamed Tes. Why is it that the Mechaber earlier quotes the first three maimers of the Gemara at the beginning of the Siman without any cholek? That is not choshesh for the position that the lav hilchasak chol hanishmaisa, and yet he quotes two days in Sif Lamed Tes regarding atzima seinayim. So the shach is bothered by that in both in the other direction, and the shach is bothered why the mechaber didn't quote two days earlier, and is choshesh at least has an allowance to be makel b'shas hadchak to follow those rov rishonim who are cholik. But within the Mechaber, it is curious that it's only within Atzimus Einayim, and then the Mechaber quotes the Yesh Omrim. So I don't have a developed approach to that, but I did notice that the Lashon of the Torah, in corresponding to Sif Lamed Tes, is V'yesh Matir Mezeh, that you have to be choshesh that if Atzma Eineha B'yoser, then lo also Latfila. The Yesh Matir and Mazet. And the Drisha there writes in Sivkat and Zion that Yesh Matir and Mazet isn't only going on in Tzimus Einayim, but it's going on the earlier three Maimros as well of Rivda Dukasilta Vechule. It doesn't really fit, even if you'd argue that fits in Lashon HaTor, even though that line of the Torah is way after the earlier Maimros, it fits even less, and I don't think you can reasonably say that within the Mechaber. Because the Mechaber in Sif Lamed Tes is clearly only in the context of Atzimah Seinayim. So you can't really argue, even if the Drisha is correct with Das HaTor, that that's the Kavana of the Mechaber. So we leave that as an observation, as Hashach already observed, why the Mechaber quotes it as two days here and not earlier. Also, to the point Moshe raised in Shir last time, it is clear in Moshe and the Tshuva, looking back at it in Simin Chelak Aleph Simin Kuf Dalid, that based on Moshe's Chiddush in Chatzitza Beis Asarim, which we'll come back to in a couple of minutes, in the context in which he actually wrote the Tshuva originally, the contact lens Tshuva is from the late 50s, written to the Rivos Ephraim. He references his chiddush in Chatzitza Beis Hasdarim that he first wrote in a tshuva back from Luban in the early 30s, which we're going to get to in a couple of minutes, about perforated eardrums. But it is clear that in principle, Rav Moshe says that according to his understanding of Chatzitza Beis Hasdarim, a contact lenses in principle should be mutter to keep in even lechachila when you go to the mikvah. And that's actually how Rav Avadia presents Rav Moshe's position. But Rav Moshe does write in the end of the Tshuva that miyos tov, you should lechachila remove them. So even if in principle, mikra din, maybe it's not a chatzitz at all, Rav Moshe still says that you shouldn't rely on that lechachila miyos tov, you should remove the contact lenses. Rav Moshe's earlier Tshuva, and there are a number of follow-up Tshuvas that Rav Moshe has in Nigus Moshe from Simen Tzadi Ches through Simen Kuf Gimel, I believe. Rav Moshe, or Kuf, where's the Kuf Gimel? Through Kuf Gimel. Rav Moshe addresses the question of what to do for a woman who has a perforated eardrum such that water can't get into the hole in the ear. That's what the post can refer to as Chor B'Tof Ha'ozen. According to entnet.org, if a person has a perforated eardrum, which is a hole or rupture in the eardrum, they write that most eardrum holes resulting from injury or an acute ear infection heal on their own within weeks of opening, although some may take several months to heal. During the healing process, the ear must be protected from water and trauma. So that's the context in which Poskim address this question of chor b'tof ha'ozen. What does a woman do and needs to go to the mikveh when she has this hole in the ear that cannot take water? So the Shoel in this, the original Tshuva in Simen Tzadi Ches in Chelek Aleph, the Shoel assumed that if a person in the under these circumstances who has this chor betofa ozen were to put in a piece of cloth that was dipped in Vaseline, and when I first saw that, I was surprised that they had Vaseline in Luban in the 1930s, but apparently Vaseline was invented already in the 19th century, and it first created as a product under that brand name in 1872. So they may have been exporting Vaseline to Luban already in the 1930s. But the Shoel assumed that if you were to put a piece of cloth inside the ear lined with Vaseline, that would be a chatzitza. And the only question he asked Moshe was, given that it is a chatzitza, but it's only a chatzitza derabana b'makom igun, where the woman would not be able to be tovelis otherwise, it sounds like this is an acute situation that wasn't going to heal quickly. And if we didn't find a solution for her to go to the mikvah, then she would never go to the mikvah, at least not for a very long time. So the way the Shoel presented the question was, understanding that this is a chatzitza, albeit a chatzitza derabanan, it's makbid, but it's a miyut. So can you be makel the makom igun? And to this, Ramosha responds that he disputes the premise. It's not pashat at all that it's a chatzitza to begin with. Maybe it's not a chatzitza under the circumstances. So Ramosha points out that number one, the Gemara has in Shabbos and Daf Samach Dalid that Isha Yotza B'moch Shabbos Neha, that a woman can walk outside Shabbos in a Rishus Arabim with a moch in her ear, even though the Gemara assumes a parallel between Chatzitza and Hotzah, that presumably if there would have been a problem of Chatzitza, there should have been Isra as well. So the assumption is that there's no Hotzah problem with moch Shabbos Neha, there wouldn't be a Chatzitza problem either. And this is what causes Ramosha to say his chiddush in Chatzitza Beis Hasdarim. But back to points that Meir and Avrami raised in the shir last time, Ramosha's starting point for this analysis is that machlokes, the 2 days in the Rashi, machlokes Rishonim, how to understand Kartza Sifsa Seha, and the fact that lahalacha we assume like the second day in the Rashi, which the Rashi in Perek Yud has as the only day of, that as long as a woman isn't forcefully closing her lips in a abnormal way, that wouldn't be that would not be a problem of chatzitza. So Moshe writes, why should that be? Why is it not the case that if a woman closes her mouth in a normal fashion, why isn't that a chatzitza? How is that considered roi l'bias mayim? The water practically can't get in. So Moshe writes, So the Rash has a line that sounds like you don't need Roi L'Bias Mayim. It's not true. The Ein Lomar Mishum Davi Mir Shein Makbid Chada Demkena Yemetzuv Lasela Chol Apachas Ruba Shein Makbid. And don't say no. The only reason it's not a chatzitza is because it's a miut Shein Makbid. But not every situation is it a miut Shein Makbid. Sometimes they might be mitzarif that to become a rove. There's no indication in poskim that there are different standards for when you can close your mouth, go into the mikvah, depending on whether there are other chatzitzas in the body that potentially could add up to a rov. That is considered to be makbid, because there are times that she does not want her mouth to be closed. So that's what leads Ramosha to explain his chiddush, that there are two types of chatzitzos. Echad the davar chotzeitz davar gal guf, v'lo havi oso chelak haguf, ro'i klal sheyavolav mayim, kifi mashuata. So chatzitza number one is something that adheres to the body in such a way. It's external to the body, it's davar to the body, and mayim can't go underneath it. And the second type, the keys of a davar acher is a guf. K'ma ochez ba'adam, v'kafsa yada, v'chadome, Sha'adam ba'atzmo ein bo shim chisaron l'bias mayim. Rak she'davar acher ochez begufo eino maniach she'avo hamayim l'gufo. There's something else that you're holding onto, part of the body, that prevents the water from coming in. So normal circumstances, both of those are considered to be a chatzitza. Someone else holds on to you under normal circumstances. That's also a chatzitza. However, when it comes to a chatzitza beis hastarim, we don't require bias mayim, we only require regular bias mayim. So the only problematic chatzitza is chatzitza flavor number one. If it's davuk and prevents water from coming underneath. But chatzitza flavor number two, if there's something external that's covering it, that's not considered ein arai l'bias mayim. So for that reason, if a woman closes her mouth in a normal fashion, so that's part of her body. If that wouldn't be bebeis hastarim, that would also be a chatzitza. But that's not considered to be a chatzitza bebeis hastarim. So that's why your emotion concludes in the nidon at hand, in the case of the perforated eardrum, that if it's possible to put in a moch without Vaseline, a dry moch, into the area, push in enough that it's beis hastarim, that should be okay. And even if it has to be lined with Vaseline, maybe that's also not a chatzitza. How does he know that? Yerushalmi and Shabbos Perakim Isha, Halacha Hey. There the Yerushalmi talks about a moch tavel b'shemen. So even if you dip the moch in a shemen, that's also in shemen, that's also not a otsa problem. So Vaseline is the same thing. And no one argues on the Yerushalmi, even though it's not quoted explicitly in Halacha. We don't find anyone that argues. Maybe that's the Davar Pasha, that shemen doesn't make it any worse. So she should clean the ear to the extent possible. There shouldn't be any other residue in the ear that could potentially be a problem of chatzitza if it's in a way that she's makbedes. And then she can put the moch into the ear, and that's not a problem of chatzitza. So writes Rav Moshe, based on his understanding of chatzitza, the beis hastarim, and the requirement of ra'oi l'bias mayim. Okay. All right, is that a reaction to the tshuva, or?
I guess I'm just wondering, I'm trying to think of a good hechitimsa, but I'm assuming you could extrapolate that to any time you have a normal existing barrier in your body, which is gone for some reason.
A barrier, what do you mean?
Meaning, isn't this point to the eardrum normally, like, is there?
Right.
So it's not, meaning it's not.
Well, you're putting in the moch in a way that it's not mistabic. It's not adhering to the, it's not sticking, it's not glued, it's not taped to the ear. So that is still considered ra'oi ra'oi l'bias mayim. Yep, okay. Remeir Arik, Chuvas Imre Yosher, Simon Kuf Sadi Hei, has another direction to allow for a woman to go to the mikveh with a perforated eardrum. That if you're going to put something in the ear to protect it from the water to avoid the potential sakana, so that may be more analogous to the braids of the Mordechai, where if there's a sakana situation, then that which is placed in a way that normally would be chotzeis mishum sakana may not be a problem of chatzitza. That's Tshuvas Imre Yosher, Simin Kuf Tzadi Hei. So he says, Malkum Cheshash Sakana. So better if you're going to insert something, if it could be dipped into water, so that may be better because of the din of mayim makdimim, which we'll get to soon. But even without that, he says, Malkum Sakana, you could rely on the Sakana piece. There's a shuv in the Avnei Nezer, Yoredeya Simon Rei Samach Beis, in which he entertains putting in a piece of katan in a way that wouldn't be removed for 7 days. So if it's not going to be removed for 7 days, so then that's analogous to the standard of a Kesher Shel Kayama Dirabanan, according to some, that if you have you make a knot that's going to last there for 7 days in Hilchos Shabbos, they may have the status of a Kesher Shel Kayama. So if you're going to put a moch or some kind of piece of cotton into the ear that's going to not go anywhere for 7 days, then maybe that also has a status of Shel Kayama, and that would be considered Eino Makri because it's there for a significant amount of time. He doesn't want to be matter on that basis. His suggestion is that you should put your finger into your, I'm sorry, you should put your finger into the mikvah ahead of time, and then put the finger into your ear. And that would be based on the din of Mayim Makdimim. Take a look at Se'if Kavches, based on the Mishnah, the end of Mikvaos. The Mechaber writes in Se'if Kavches, Lo tachos b'chaverta b'yadeha b'shas tfila. So another woman should not hold the woman going into the mikvah with her hands when she's going into the mikvah. El imkein rafsa yada, lest she loosens her hands, kadei she yavo amayim b'makam achizas yada, so that the water will totally cover the woman who's being tavelas. The im hidicha yadeha b'mayim tchila shari, but if the woman who's assisting the tavelas first rinses her hands in mikvah water before assisting the tavelas, so that creates a chibur. If she has mikvah water that is on her hands and then she touches a woman, that's considered that whatever water is on her hands is still mechubur to the mikvah, and the woman who's tavelas is considered to be totally submerged in the mikvah. So we might get to discuss the background of that when we get there on the simon. But based on this din of mayim makdimim, so the Avnei Nezer says, if you're going to stick your hand into the mikvah such that it's now surrounded with mikvah water, and then stick your finger into your ear in a way that's going to protect the ear, then that would still be a valid tefillah. That would be considered ra'oi l'bias mayim. You're sticking your finger in your ear, but if you were to move the finger, then the water could still get in, and that's considered ra'oi l'bias mayim. Avrami.
Does your finger or whatever still need to be wet?
It needs to be wet, yeah. Tofeach
aminas apiach. Right, so then wouldn't that be counterproductive? Because then you're just causing the water's on your finger now.
So you're asking a medical question.
Yeah,
so that you'd have to discuss with a doctor. I guess the thinking was that if this is going to work, it's because the amount of water that is still residual on your finger is less than the water that would be going into the ear if you went normally into the mikvah, and that's not enough water to cause a problem. But I'm not recommending that anyone do this at home. That's just the way you present it.
Is there a difference between Sakanas Eiver and Sakanas Nefashos? I assume this is Sakanas Eiver, not...
No. If you get infected, an infection could be life-threatening, potentially.
Is that's the problem? If you get wet, it can get infected?
That is a problem, and any infection, potentially, if it's not treated, could be life-threatening. Okay. Now, in theory, I don't know if there's a difference, meaning if we're talking about being matier, or rendering something in Adel Chatzitza because of a sakana along the lines of the Mordechai, I don't know if that needs to be sakana stafashos. So the rationale is that that's not considered to be makbid if it's not going anywhere because of a sakana. So even if it's a sakana saver, it's not going anywhere. In Sfar, I don't think there should be a difference, but in this particular case, we're talking about a potential infection. Potential infection is always at least a potential pikuach nefesh concern. On this suggestion of the Avnei Nezer to rely on Mayim Makdimim and to stick your finger into your ear, the Shari Tfila raises two objections, Simon Mem Aleph, that number one, is that really so? The Avnei Nezer assumed as a Davar Pashut that if you stick the finger into your ear, that's considered Rai L'Bias Mayim. Why? Because you can remove your finger. But if you're not removing your finger, then how is that Raya Labias Mayim at that point? And objection number two is that if you're going to be sticking your finger into your ear, that may create kamatim or folds on the finger, which would be a potential chatzitza problem. So we've removed the potential chatzitza problem from the ear, and now we create a potential chatzitza problem on the finger. So to address that, in the Pisrei Das, Rabbi Morgenstern just points out that if you were to follow this etza of the Avnei Nezer, then you would have to have someone else stick their finger in your ear when you're going to the mikvah, and that would avoid the problem of having kamatim on your finger, on the tevelis's finger, because the kamatim would be on the assistant's finger. So you'd have the assistant sticking her finger in your ear when going to the mikvah, and that would at least avoid the kamatim problem. Rabbi Neubert, I saw in that Sefer Olal Sara that we just discovered earlier this week, he makes the same point. And that's based on Piskei Tshuva in Sifkat and Tesvav, who makes the same observation in a related context. Piskei Tshuva Sifkat on Tesvav writes, that in a situation in which there's a medical need or a need to cover the eyes when going to the mikvah, so he discusses a similar scenario of covering your eyes with your hand, and he says over there as well that should be done by someone else and not the tevelis herself, because of the potential problem of kamatim that would be raised if the tevelis herself is going to put her finger over her eyes. So that's the same point, that if you're going to go with this etza, you would have to have someone else do it. I also saw in Rav Neuwirth's little sefer that which the Avnei Nezer rejects, the suggestion of putting in a piece of cotton that's going to stay there for 7 days, Rav Neuwirth quotes that he heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that would be acceptable, meaning even if you're not going to take Rav Moshe's understanding that this isn't a chassid to begin with, that potentially it is considered makbid, but leaving it in for a defined long amount of time, which he talks about 7 days, may render it eino makbid for that period. So he quotes that from Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he also quotes that if you're going to go with the 7 day cheshbon, it doesn't have to be that it's been in for 7 days before Leil Tefillah. As long as it's going to be there for 7 days inclusive of Leil Tefillah, then that would be sufficient. And Chubas Har Tzvi has something similar. Tzvi Pesach Frank in Yerodea Simin Kuf Ayin talks about this as well, that for the week before Tefillah, she should keep this insertion into in her ear for that full week. And even if you have to change it at some point, if you immediately change it for a replacement, that's not considered to have removed it. That would be like a temporary filling, and that would solve the problem potentially. Rabbi Morgenstern quotes from Eliyashiv that he thought that cotton in the ear was a chatzitza problem under all circumstances, and therefore that wouldn't help for the perforated eardrum problem. In the Shari Tefillah, he also discusses the suggestion of some to insert fish oil into the ear. What's the advantage of fish oil? So the Mishnah in Mikvos, Perek Vav, Mishnah Zayin, writes that kol shehu mibriya samayim tahor, that anything that is created from the water is not mekabel tuma, and also not chotzeitz. As the Gemara says in Zvach Mandav Kav Beis, that Briyaso Min Hayam is considered to have a din of Mayim. So if you're to put fish oil, which is considered Briyaso Min Hayam, in the ear, so that's the equivalent of putting water into the ear. So Rabbi Morgenstern points out that that's only talking about putting fish oil alone. But if you're going to put fish oil on the cotton, that doesn't remove the problem of the cotton. And then he points out that fish oil itself isn't really 100% fish oil. Fish oil is also water-based, and therefore it's not considered briyaso min hayam. Then the Piskei Das says that the best etza is to put antibiotic drops into the ear before tefillah. And his medical advice was that by putting drops of antibiotics into the ear, that would prevent any potential infection from getting water into the ear. I discussed this with my local ENT here in Pasek, Dr. Lederreich, who told me that that's not recommended. He didn't think that putting eardrops or antibiotic drops into the ear would necessarily solve the problem and prevent infection. But even Rabbi Morgenstern acknowledges that you shouldn't try this on your own. You should consult with a medical professional to see what the whether these solutions are tenable. So this is not a very common medical scenario, but were it to come up, if you don't accept Ramosha's understanding of Chatzis Beis HaTorim, it doesn't look like there's any perfect solution. You have to figure out what the best solution is. There are poskim that fall in line with any of these suggestions, and you'd have to figure out what to do lemaisa in consultation with medical professionals. Okay, but of more interest to us are the theory behind some of these suggestions than the actual case. Okay, so in the original Maimros that we saw in Samosayinam and Aleph, the Gemara had the Rivda de Kusilta, and the Gemara distinguished between within 3 days and after 3 days, that the Rivda de Kusilta, the scab that was formed on a wound caused by bloodletting. So the Gemara says, Atlas Yomi lo chaitzi, that up to 3 days, it's not considered to be a chatzitza, nikan ve'ela chaitzi, after 3 days, it is a chatzitza. Says Rashi, that what's the significance of 3 days? Within 3 days, it's rach u'mechugar, it's considered, it's soft, it's connected to the body, and after 3 days, it hardens, and at that point, it's not as mechugar to the body, and would be chotzeitz after 3 days. So the Rishonim were bothered. How do you square this Maimra and the Gemara on Samosayinam and Aleph, the distinction between a scab within 3 days and a scab after 3 days, with the Mishnayos in the Kvos? In Perek Tes Mishnah Beis, the Mishnah lists, among things that are chotzeitzim, a glad shechutz lamaka, a scab that is external to the wound, meaning a scab that presents itself beyond the location of covering the actual initial wound, meaning there is some spread, and the scab that we're looking at is beyond the location of the initial wound. So that's a glad shechutz lamaka. So that's on the list of things that the Mishnayos say are chotzesin, the external scab. And the Mishnah in Mishnah Dalet, Paratest Mishnah Dalet, talks about a glad sha'al hamaka, the scab that is directly over the ground zero wound, and that is not chotzeitz. So our Gemara here distinguishes between within 3 days and after 3 days, but no distinction between the quality or the location of the scab. And the Mishnayos in Mikvos distinguish between the location without any distinction between within 3 days and after 3 days. So the Rashba, the Ramban are bothered by this. The Ramban here on Samozayinam and Aleph writes as follows. A glad sha'al gabe sha'al hamaka nami mishum haitaimahu delo avit inish liklof glad makasa. So if you have a scab that's over the maka, so it's not normal to peel off the scab of a maka, mishum de kasha lamaka ad de yavish umaklif minashe, because to remove that scab would be difficult for the maka, would presumably prevent the healing of the maka, and therefore a person is not going to remove such a scab until it falls off on its own. The kasavar who, the kasavar One second. See if I can pull this on the screen. Okay, so again, glad shalamaka nami mishum haitai mahudalo avit inish liklof glan makaso mishum the kashalamaka the avishamaklof minashe. So you're not going to remove it because that would harm the healing process until it comes off on its own. The kasavir the hudafka shalmaka. But that's true by a regular maka that develops the scab. Aval rivda de kusilta at lasa yomin de lo kapit inishala lo chaita. But when it comes to a scab that develops over a bloodletting wound, so there's a distinction between 3 days and after 3 days. And within 3 days, people aren't makbid, and therefore it's not chotzeitz. Mikan ve'ela chaitza, after 3 days, it is chotzeitz. Inami, at lasa yomin locha v'lo ma'akva, or within 3 days, it's moist and is not ma'akev, v'lo ma'akva maya, and it doesn't prevent water from getting over it, underneath it. Mikan ve'ela chaitza de'yavesha v'kapital, and afterwards, it dries, and it does prevent water from getting underneath, and then you are makbid. So the Ramban first says that as far as the Mishnayos in Mikvaos are concerned, if you have a wound, a scab above the wound, so where there is tsar involved in removing it, that's considered to be eino makbid. If you're naturally not going to remove it because you don't want to interfere with the healing process, and you're just going to leave it there, and it's going to be painful to remove it, that's considered to be makbid, and that's why it's not chotzeitz. So that's the maka that we're talking about in the Mishnayos in Mikvos, as opposed to a scab that develops. Oh, and there we have a distinction between glad shechutz lamaka and glad she'alamaka, that apparently if you have a glad shechutz lamaka, that is less painful, and therefore a person is not going to be as hesitant to remove the glad shechutz lamaka, as opposed to a glad she'al hamaka. And the distinction of 3 days is not relevant to that kind of a scab. The distinction of 3 days is only relevant to a dam hakaza scab, where there is going to be a kapeda after 3 days, slash it's yadesh and therefore impenetrable, and that's why it would be a chatzitza after 3 days. So according to the Ramban, the type of scab they're talking about in Mishnayos and Mikvaos is different than the type of scab in our sugya over here. And the reason for the distinction between al gabe hamaka and chutz lamaka in the Mishnayos and Mikvaos is based on whether it's painful to remove, whether you're naturally going to leave it there, not to interfere with the healing process.
What's the scab in our sugya?
Yeah, an arsug is just a dam hakaza. You're just pricking yourself to let blood. So that's a less painful kind of scab that you could more easily remove, and people would not hesitate to remove it. So it sounds like it's a different quality scab that's less painful to remove. The Baal Amor in the Hasagos on the Baal Nefesh's Shara Tfila Sifkat and Beis. So from the Baal Amor, it comes at a different terrace to this problem, that the Mishnayos in Mikvaos are talking about a scab that forms over a person's skin that dries. That you have some skin situation, and a scab develops over that skin, and that scab dries out, as opposed to the ribda de kasilta isn't a scab that forms as the body heals, but rather blood that came out that dries and creates some kind of a scab, if you will, from that dried blood. Okay. So what emerges from the Ramban and the Rashba is that if you don't remove something because, or if the reason you're not picking at a scab or the reason you're not removing a scab is because of the tsar involved, then that's enough to make it considered eino makpid. And that's also reflected in a tshuva of the Ri in the Mordechai Simon Tafshin Memches. Mordechai Tafshin Memches, quoted by the Beis Yosef over here, that Me'ikar Adin, such a scab where it's painful to remove and therefore a person naturally is not going to remove it, Me'ikar Adin, that's not considered to be chotzeitz. But this tshuva Sari quotes a minog to remove it anyway. Either to remove it anyway or to wait for it to naturally fall off her heel before, excuse me, going to the mikvah. And that's like what the Taz quotes in Sukkot and Yudalid from the Sar Mikotzi. The ishtol shel maharak haisatzricha lama lefan of aruma shayaroa shelo haya garava leha shelo haya mamin la shaisa mesira shaisa nara. So his wife was young, and he didn't trust her to check all her chatzitzas properly. So he would check that there were no chatzitzas, and that if there's any scab was removed, hayakoivla, v'chein asa sar mikotzi l'ishta. So that was a practice of the sar mikotzi to make sure that there were no scabs before going to the mikveh, even if it was painful to remove it. So apparently he held that's considered to be makbid. That's the question. Was this a Me'ikar Adin Kepeda or was this a Chumra? Where there's Sar to remove a glad, a scab, was a Sar Mikosi saying that that's Chosis Me'ikar Adin or is this some Chumra? So the Lashon of the Smack that the Beis Yosef quotes is Hirgilu Hanashim Lahasir Me'alei on Kol Grav Kol Shchin Afavisha Min Adin Lo Ayotzarech. So that sounds like it wasn't a chumra imposed by the Bali Tosfos on their wives, but it was a natural practice that developed on the part of the women to remove any scab, even though min hadin lo yad tzarech. So that formulation of the smack is clear that this is a chumra ba'alma, and the assumption of the Rashba and the Ramban and the Shuvah Sari is accepted lahalacha me'ikar adin, that if there's tsar in removing a scab, then that's not chotzeis, and it's only a organic chumra that developed among Benos Yisrael to remove such scabs. Sidrei Tara writes in Sifkatan Kaf Gimel, paragraph beginning of the Tukasha, Sifkatan Kaf Gimel, that if a woman has tsar in removing a scab, then that's not a chatzitza me'ikar adin. That was only a chumra, not medina, along the lines of what we just saw in the lashon of the smack himself. However, he says that it doesn't sound like that was the assumption of the sar mikotzi. The sar mikotzi seemed to assume that this was a me'ikar adin consideration, which is why he didn't rely on his wife's own self-representation. And he insisted on removing any scabs, even B'makom Sar, because he must have assumed that that was Me'ikar Adin, a chatzitza. After all, the Mishnayos don't distinguish between a scab where there's Sar and a scab where there's no Sar, even though that's how the Ramban and the Rashba understood the distinction of the Mishnah. So that's what the Sidur Tara writes to explain the practice of Sar Mikotzi. He seemed to have assumed that this was actually a Me'ikar Adin consideration, that it was potentially a chatzitza Me'ikar Hadin. And so writes Rabbi Kiva Eger in Tshuvos Madura Kama Simen Samech, that's how he presented the position of the Smag, not of the Smak, but the Smag. The Smag assumed that this was a Me'ikar Adin Cheshbon. Rav Shechter suggested that maybe the concern of a Chatzitza of a Glad even B'malkum Tsar would be based on an understanding along the lines of the Me'iri's extension of the Gaonim. We saw the Me'iri extended the Gaonim's position that Tsar is considered, Sayer is considered to be a separate unit in determining Rov for Chatzitza purposes. The Me'iri presents this as being relevant to any Aver, that when you look at any Aver on the body as its own unit in determining Rov. So maybe the Tsar Mikotzi was concerned that you could have a glad on a pinky, and maybe that's big enough to be rove of the pinky. Even there, to have a scab and rove of the pinky is probably unusual, but maybe that was the basis of this concern. Why should it be a problem? Ikaradin, if you assume like the onim and you assume like the extension of the Me'iri, that even a single aver is its own unit in determining rove, so maybe you could theoretically have a scab that would be rove of the tiniest aver, whatever that would be. Just to mention parenthetically, back to that point of the Me'iri and the Shita Sagaonim, there is an Amne Nezer, Chuvas Amne Nezer Yerodea Simn Reish Samach Gimel, Amne Nezer Yerodea Reish Samach Gimel, who entertains, quoting it to Ferris Lamosha, which is quoted by the Sidri Tara, that just as Seir is considered to be its own unit for purposes of Rove, according to the Gaonim, then the teeth are considered their own unit as well. And if you have a chatzitza of rov sayar, that would be a problem. So too, if you have a chatzitza of rov shinayim, that would be a problem as well. That's based on a Mishnah Olos, Paragimel, Mishnah Gimel. Kol shebemeis tamei chutz min hashinayim hasayar v'hatzi poren. That teeth as hair are not subject to tumas meis, so would not be mitame he quotes the Gemara Inida Nun Hey Amud Aleph. That's because the pasuk O be'etzem Adam Dumi de Etzem Ma Etzem Nivrimo v'ingizomachlif Akol shenivrimo v'ingizomachlif to the exclusion of Shinayim Sayar Vitzipore. And by tefillah it says, Rachat b'mayim kol b'saro. And we learn out es a rabbos, es a sayar. So maybe that's also coming to tell you shinayim, otherwise you wouldn't know shinayim. So if that's true, then maybe whatever special status sayar has is shared by shinayim. So that's not quoted l'alacha by poskim, but the Avnei Nezer entertains that possibility. Okay. If you assume, like the Tsar Mikotzi, that even if you have a glad which is painful, that would still be a chatzitza, why would you distinguish between a glad and, or why would you distinguish between Tsar and Sakana? Why is it that we would accept the Mordechai that if you have a Sakana situation, that would not pose a chatzitza problem, that would be considered Eina Makbid, but Tsar alone isn't enough to make it Eino, isn't enough to make it Eino Makbid. Rabbi Kiveger writes in that tshuva in Simach Samach, in Simon Samach, that it might be along the lines of the following. When it comes to Tsar, Tsar is much more subjective, that the different people have different tolerances for pain, different thresholds for how they tolerate pain. And you could have a woman who, even if it's objectively painful to remove something, she may do it carefully. She may not be as bothered by the pain. And even if it's a little bit painful, if you have a scab, she may remove it carefully, little by little. So as opposed to sakana, where there are presumably objective standards for sakana, that's not true for Tsar. Because of its subjective nature, it'd be harder to make something in absolute terms a Eino Makbid just because there's Tsar involved in removing it. And so that's that. Yeah, Moshe.
By anyone who says like a Svara that makes something into Eino Makbid, does that mean we always have to be Machmir according to the Ramah?
Well, as the Aruch HaShulchan explained at the beginning of the Siman, we're machmir according to the Ramah if all things are equal. But if there's a refuah situation or other shachat chak situations, then you can be mekel. So once you define something as eino makbid, that gives you license to be mekel in a shachat chak situation where there's no easy way out. L'chachila, you always remove whatever you can remove. But if you have something that's not easily removed because it's tsar, because it's sakana, so then...
How do we know that's why tsar considered shachat chak?
You're saying relative to removing it despite the tsar?
Yeah.
Because to put yourself in a situation of tsar is a shasat kak. We're not going to, you know, if there are, it's the Ramah is a chumrah. So all things being equal, you should be machmer even if it's a miyashena makbet. But if there's going to be tsar involved, it's going to be painful. So then all things aren't equal. So then you don't have to keep that chorma under those circumstances.
I'm saying when all the later poskim are discussing things about like whether it's considered makbid or eino makbid. So is that like taking the Ramah into account? And like,
yeah, it's all these situations are relevant to where you have no easy way out. The stitches, casts, bandages. Everything we're going to be talking about the next couple of shirim. So those are things that if you're not going to be makel, then you may have to push out the tefillah because there's no easy way around it. And you have to figure out is at the end of the day, is that considered a makbid or not? And can you be makel? Okay. Now the Sidrei Torah points out in Sifkat and Kavav, paragraph beginning Mikol Makom, that the din of chetz gives you the impression that even b'makom tsar, it's still a something would still be a chatzitza. So the mechaber quotes the din of chetz in Se'if Yud Aleph. That's again the Mishnah in Paratesh Mikvos. Chetz o kotz atacha b'basar. If you have a arrow or a splinter that is embedded in the flesh, so the details we'll talk about probably next time, unless we get to it quickly today. But the fact that you have a chetz that's tachut b'basar under certain circumstances going to be chotzeitz, presumably that's the situation where there's tsar involved in removing it, and yet that's potentially chotzeitz despite the tsar. So the Sidrei Torah says that you would have to distinguish between something which is totally external to the body and something which is part of the body. So if you have a glad, if you have a scab, so the scab is really part of the body. It's growing in a different way, but it's really part of the body. And there, you can make an argument that b'makom tsar is considered to be eino makbid. But if you have something that's totally external to the body, you have an embedded arrow, there's no shaykhus to the body. So even if there's tsar involved, it's harder to argue that that is considered to be eino makbid because that is no shaykhus to the body. It doesn't belong there, even if you may not remove it immediately because of the tsar involved. So Sidrei Torah essentially says that there's an added component when you're evaluating what's considered to be makbid in the context of tsar. So you would have to, if you have to modify the distinctions by adding another layer of whether it's considered intrinsic to the body and therefore more likely butthole to the body, or whether it is totally external. Now, the Badei Shulchan expands on that a little bit in the Be'urim on page Kavches, that he says, if you have something which is part of the body, so you have a scab, which is essentially a growth of the body, so then if your intention is to remove it at some later point, but bottom line, right now you have no intention of removing it, and right now it's arguably butthole to the body, so that's going to be considered eino makbid. But if you have something that's external to the body that was never part of it, you have an arrow that got embedded in your skin or under your skin. So then, even if you don't have any intention of removing it now, but your intention is to remove it lachar zman, so that's still considered to be makpid. Bottom line, Badr Shulchan writes in Sivkata and Ayin Ches that if there is sar to remove something, then the poskim are makel to go to the mikvah even with such a scab. If it's not going to easily peel off, if it's painful to remove, and it's not going to disintegrate in the water. And he points out the Mishnah Brura essentially says that in Hilchos Netilas Sidayim as well, in Simen Kuf Samach Aleph Sivkatan Tes Zayin, Kuf Samach Aleph Sivkatan Tes Zayin. And that's what Rabbi Morkes across from Avlyashiv as well, and Peh Shin Ayin Hey, that if there's no other way out, so then you can go to the mikvah with the scab. As the Mechaber writes, in Sivtes, that Isha Balas Chatatim Tzricha Lachuf B'mayim Ache Yisrakuchu, that if a woman has some kind of, I don't know if it's exactly eczema or some equivalent of a skin condition where something gets loosened, so she has to do a chafifa until whatever mamashis there is going to soften to the extent that it softens, and then you go to the mikvah. So that's what Rabbi Morgan's question of Yoshev here too. If there's a scab, you soften it to see if anything's going to come off, but if even after you soften it, it's still there and nothing's coming off and there's sar to remove it, so then you could go to the mikvah. And that's what in the Shira Shevet Levi, he writes that if a woman has real eczema, so you remove whatever is easily removable, whatever could be removed, but you don't have to go crazy beyond that if there are things, pieces of skin that are not removable. And then you soften it in the water to the extent possible that whatever is able to come off comes off, and whatever won't come off would not be considered a chatzitza. Okay. Sif Yud, the Mechaber writes, Ritiya sh'ala maka chotzetzes. If you have a bandage on a maka, the bandage covering a maka, that is a chatzitza. So that's another one of the items on the list in the Mishnah in the beginning of Parites of Mikvos is something that is chotzetzes. A bandage ala maka is chotzetzes. And then take a look at Sif Kaf Gimel. We saw this if before in the context of rings and nose rings and bracelets, but in that list of the davar rafui that's not chotzeitz, the Mechaber also says chena din be'egad shal amaka. If you have a bandage over a maka, then if it's rafui, it's not chotzeitz. If it's mehudak, it is chotzeitz. Then you have in Sif Mem Gimel, Aspalanis melugma ritiya shal beis hastarim. If you have a medicated bandage or a bandage that's on beis hastarim, chotzitzin. Afa pisha enim svichim shichnisu b'mayim, svichim sheyiruuyim v'lo yehei behem davar chotzitz. Okay, so again, Sif Yud says the ritiya is chotzitzes. Sif Kaf Gimel, the type of eged, which is a kind of a cover over maka, we distinguish between whether it's rafui or mehudak. And in Sif Mem Gimel, in the context of Beis Hastarim, an Aspalanis, Ritiya, medicated bandage, and bandage are also Chotzesim. So the later Achronim try to figure out what is the Ritiya that the Mechaber is talking about, that the Mishnah is talking about. Because why is that any different? As the Chachmas Adam raises, Chachmas Adam in Klal Kuf Yud Tes Ozayin, Kuf Yud Tes Ozayin, why is that any different than the Mordechai Sakana? Why is that different than a Glad, where there's tsar to remove it? What is different about ritiya that the Mechaber so say, and the Mishnah so say, so samus, that a ritiya is chotzetzes? And the Chachmas Adam leaves that as a tsaruch ian. What ritiya are we talking about? So in the Shari Tfila, Simon Lamed Ches, he quotes from Rabbi Akiva Eiger, page Kuf Gimel in the Drush V'Chiddush, page Kuf Gimel in the Drush V'Chiddush, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that we're talking about a ritia where there's no tsar involved when you remove it. In a chanami, if it's a ritia, it's a bandage where there'd be tsar involved or sakan involved in removing it, so then that is the same din as a glad or as a davashesh basakan. We're talking about a ritia where there's no tsar involved, and therefore it's considered to be makbid and chotzeitz. The quotes from the Sefer Pachad Yitzchak that we're talking about, not Rafutner, the Italian Pachad Yitzchak, that we're talking about a bandage where you have to remove it every day. So if you remove it every day, there's no tsar involved in removing it. That's part of the course of treatment. And that would be chotzeitz. That's what Rav Avadia writes as well. Chelek Gimel, page Lamed Ches. Now we're talking about the kind of a bandage that you remove regularly, that you change regularly, and there's no tsar involved in removing it. But otherwise, if there was real tsar, then we would be makel to consider it eino makbid, to consider it makbid. And he quotes a list of achronim that say this way as well. Badi Shulchan leaves us as a tsaruchi and lalacha. Is that really true? That you could really be makel across the board anytime you have a bandage that is painful to remove. Chuas Divrei Chaim, the Tzanzer Rav, Yeredeya Chelik Beis Simen Samechei, Divrei Chaim, Yeredeya Chelik Beis Simen Samechei. Shaila was, Odos Ha'isha Asher Ritia Al Makasa, so she has a bandage on her maka, and the representation of the doctors is that it is dangerous to remove it. They write, the im hu davrish eina masira b'shum pam, hu kemat sakana hu la, b'vadi lavi chatzitza. If it's something that she's never going to remove, and there's kemat sakana, even if it's not 100% clear, but it's viewed as a sakana to remove it, so then that's not considered a chatzitza. V'lachein. If you can remove it easily without pain, but if we are concerned about pain and sakana, so she should rinse it with hot water to the extent possible. And that will not be a chatzitza. So that's Divrei Chaim, that if there is sakana involved, or tsar, then that would be enough reason to treat a ritia as a glad alamaka, where it's me'ikar adin considered to be a davrish eino makbid, and therefore, if there's no other way out, you can go to the mikvah wearing this ritia. And again, we could probably distinguish between a glad and a ritia along the lines of the Sidrei Tara that we mentioned earlier, who explained the difference between ches and a glad on the basis of whether it's in part of the body or something external to the body. So taking his argument that the ches being external to the body, even if there's tsar, it still could be considered to be a chatzitza since it's not part of the body. So that might be relevant to a riti as well, if you take that argument. So the Sidrei Tara may well say, by the same token, that a ritiya, being that it's external to the body, would be like a chetz, and if it's something that's going to be removed at some point in the future, would be considered a chatzitza, since you can't argue that it's batel to the body. The Gilya Marsha points out the parallel in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim. So Mechabrin Kuf Samach Beis If Yud, Kuf Samach Beis If Yud writes, Mi sheyesh lo maka biyado uriti aleha, that if a person has a maka on his hand and there is a bandage on top of the maka, Dai lo shayito sha'ar hayat shalab ha'makam ritiya. So in that case, it's sufficient to perform the tilas yadayim over the rest of the hand and not be worried about the part of the hand that's covered by a ritiya. The Asa Magen Avraham, Kasha, Magen Avraham Sukkati and Yiches, the Har Ritiya Chasheshes. So this is in Kuf Samach Beis, but in Kuf Samach Aleph, Seif Aleph, in the Simon of Chatzis and Ritiya Sedayim, so there the Mechaber writes that a Ritiya is Chotzetzes. So how is it that here the Mechaber says that a Ritiya is not Chotzetzes? Yesh Lomar, the Hachamari Kisheinam Akbar Alayu. So here we're talking about a Chatzitza that you are not makbid on. If it's a chatzitza that you're not makbid on, meaning that it's going to stay there, there's sorry to remove it, there's some consideration that makes it eino makbid. So then in that situation, you don't have to remove the ritiya in order to wash the tilas yadayim. That's what Mishnah Berurah quotes both in Simon Kuf Samach Aleph Sivkata and Hey. Kuf Samach Aleph of Katan Hey, and Kuf Samach Beis of Katan Ches, basically this same distinction, that in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim as well, if you have a ritiya that is painful to remove, that is medically ill-advised to remove, so that would not be considered a chatzitza for Netilas Yadayim purposes, and that's parallel to what we're suggesting, at least according to many poskim, maybe the case in Hilchos Tefillah as well. The Ksav Sofer, Yerideya Simen Sadi Aleph, has a possible reason to be Machmir. He writes that any bandage that you're going to remove on occasion to check on the healing of the wound, they have a bandage, it's generally covering the wound, but you remove it on occasion to check on the wound, or to fix the bandage. So since you're going to be removing it at certain intervals, then that itself may be enough to be considered makbid. If it's something that you're never going to remove or for a defined period of time, you're never going to remove, so then you could argue it's eino makbid. But if you have to remove it at regular intervals, either to readjust the bandage or to check on the progress of the healing, so that might be enough to consider it makbid. Even according to that, if you have a bandage that you couldn't remove, if you have a cast, so you can't remove that on your own, so then even the Ksav Sofer might acknowledge that that's considered eino makbid because you have no way of removing it even if you wanted to. Chuvas Hartzvi, Yaradeya Simon Kuf Samachay, is reluctant to be Mekel, even though it sounds like Mekar Adin acknowledges that there are grounds to. The Shaila was a person had a cast on a finger because of a broken bone, and it has to stay there for a couple months. So there are stronger arguments here to consider it eino makbid because there's no way you're removing it. And there's definitely tsar to remove it. And it's medically ill-advised. But Rasvi Pesach Frank writes, in principle, there's no sakana to remove it. Delay the healing process, but there's no sakana. So he says that if the shoel is able to be mashpi on the baal, to just wait until they remove the cast, then tavala bracha. But if we're worried that he's going to come to avera v'hurhure avera, so in order to be matzil from avera v'hurhure avera, then she could go to the mikvah together with the cast on. So in principle, Mikra Adin, push comes to shove, we'll consider it Eino Makbid. But Rav Pesach Frank thinks that all things being equal, it's better to be machmir and to wait until the cast will be removed. But then he writes a little bit more liberally in Yaradeya Simen Kuf Samach Tes. The only reason that a Ratiya is Makbid in general is because Stam Ratiya you don't want there. But if it's something that's going to be staying there for a long time and the doctor tells you do not remove it, so it's hard to call that Makbid. Because there, Stam Ratiya, you assume you're Makbid. But here it's like Mefurish that you're not Makbid. Because you're not allowed to remove it. And the Sidri Torah says that you can be samech on the poskim that if you're mitzar ben etilasa, that's considered ena makbid. So in that case, he was matir to be toveles with the cast. So in the first tshuva, it sounds like he was more reluctant to, even though mikra din, he assumed that it's not a chatzitza. In the second tshuva, there's less reluctance. Because of the argument that if it's going to be there for the set amount of time and the doctor tells you you can't remove it, that would make it into eino makbid. And that's the conclusion of the Sitz Eliezer as well. Chelek Dalet Simen Tes, Chelek Dalet Simen Tes. That if you have a cast, that there's no way you could remove it within the window of time where it's supposed to be on, unless you're going to cause a lot of pain, and there may be even minimal sakana to the healing process. So then you could be makel to allow the woman to go to the mikvah, even without removing the cast, because that's considered to be miyut she'eino makbid, which is not chotzeitz. So bottom line, in the Shari Tvila, he writes that if you have a cast that's going to be there for a significant amount of time, so b'shas etchak, you could be mekel if there's going to be tsar or sakana to remove it, especially if there's a chashash michshol, like Pesach Frank raised, and especially if it's in Beis Hastarim, so Beis Hastarim may only be derabanan, more reason to be mekel. Rav Avadia is a little bit more liberal about being mekel, beginning on page Samach Aleph, that if it's going to be there for a long time, leave it there. And Rav Eliashiv is quoted as saying that even if it's going to be there for a long time, you shouldn't be Mekel. And that's the position of the Shevet Levi as well. So the consensus of the Poskim is that if you have a cast that's going to be removed within relatively short order, wait for it to be removed. If it's going to be there longer, so then that's a case-specific psak. Based on the factors of how long and what is the risk factor of waiting. Rabbi Morkes, of course, Rav Yashiv was reluctant to be Mekel Bechlal in any such situation, even if it's going to be there for a long time. Okay. Let's just spend... Yeah, Mayor? Yeah.
What's Rabbi Willard to talk about this?
I don't think I've ever discussed it with him or heard him talk about it. My sense is that if it would be necessary to be Mekel, he would be, but I think that would be case specific. But I haven't heard from Hagdaras from him. Okay. Should we talk about coats now or leave that for next time? Maybe we'll leave it for next time. Okay, so next time, excuse me, we'll talk about coats a little bit more, talk about stitches, and then move on to makeup. I shared with you the next sheet of Mar Makamos, so next time we should be finishing the existing sheet and beginning the next sheet. For next week,